Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Sugar Demons, An Addict's Guide to Conquering Sugar Addiction, by Jonathan Cranford, narrated by Joe Knezovich. Introduction. An Addict's Guide to Conquering Sugar Addiction. Congratulations on discovering the book that will help you finally end the vicious cycle of relapses in your struggle with sugar addiction. As you've likely discovered, most of the advice in books and articles about sugar addiction is only marginally useful. Drink more water and eat healthy food. Thanks, Internet. That should really help when I'm dead tired from work, the kids are screaming, and all I can think about is ice cream. What you need are real strategies to get through sugar withdrawal and into the promised land, where sugar cravings are non-existent, energy is high, and weight loss is effortless. Inside, you'll find a science-based, addict-approved, step-by-step plan for conquering your addiction to sugar and refined carbohydrates. A serious approach that treats addiction like the war that it is, while also turning it into a fun game you can win. How to take discipline and willpower out of the equation in your battle with addiction. A list of supplements that will give you an edge against the sugar demons. Real-world stories and experiences from the life of an actual sugar addict. How to take the hassle out of meal prep, and how to get all of your meals prepped for the week in under an hour. Worksheets to keep you on track as you work through this process. Chapter 1. The Sugar Demons. 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, just after dinner. Taco-seasoned ground turkey, sweet potato, a few cups of steamed broccoli. The perfect recovery meal after a long workday and a hard workout in the gym. But before I can sleep, there's one more trial to overcome. A final challenge from an enemy I know too well. It's the nightly assault of the sugar demons. I've fought this battle countless times before. If I can resist their temptations, I'll sleep soundly, wake up refreshed, and tomorrow gets a little easier. But if I lose, there are consequences. I wake up feeling tired, head unclear, my body struggling to get out of bed. Worst of all, the sugar demons get stronger and harder to resist. If I continue losing, I risk falling into a death spiral of weight gain and depression. The sugar leads to weight gain. The weight gain leads to depression, and the demons feed on depression. In turn, this leads to binge after binge, more weight gain, more bad feelings, and so on and so forth. This pattern must be avoided at all costs. But they whisper. Not with words, mind you. My demons communicate through feelings. It makes them hard to detect and harder to kill. They shine a spotlight on your negative emotions and suggest a solution in the most friendly, casual, innocent way. But the solution is always the same, always sinister. You are stressed, they whisper. Stress is their favorite weapon. It's the one I'm most likely to cave to, although bored works well enough on occasion. You recognize the feeling and know what you need to do to make it go away, at least for a little while. A pint of ice cream would be my go-to delivery mechanism. I learned long ago not to keep any in the house. Sugar is a drug, and when the drug is that close, the battle is already lost. Ridding your house of sugar is the first strike against the demons in what is to be a very long war. But the enemy is patient. They have other ways of getting to you. Their next trick will be allowing you to think sugar itself is the enemy. It is not. Sugar is just a series of atoms linked together, mostly carbon and hydrogen, hence the term carbohydrate. Sugar is just a chemical fact. Sugar demons, on the other hand, are destructive creatures who hide in your subconscious. In other words, you carry them with you. You carry them with you in the same place a heroin junkie carries his demons, though sometimes I envy the heroin junkie. At least every friend, family member, co-worker, TV commercial, sign, and billboard isn't trying to feed his addiction. Is it not heresy to refuse a slice of cake at your niece's birthday party? My demons are enabled by an entire culture. So you empty your pantry of all sweets and you swear off desserts. Your efforts work, for a time. The demon's hold upon you weakens. They get smaller, quieter. But they wait. The enemy is patient. It waits until you sort of forget that sugar lives in bread and pasta and alcohol and other processed foods. It waits for you to forget your triggers. It waits for you to think it's finally gone. But they whisper, "You are stressed. You know this trick. You're capable of avoiding anything resembling a dessert. You've trained for this. You are stronger now. But you happen to be driving near a barbecue restaurant and realize you could totally go for some ribs right now. That will make you feel better. And ribs are protein, so technically it's not cheating, right?" As you head home, still licking the barbecue sauce from your fingers, you feel as though you've made a decent compromise. But the sugar demons are feasting on the deceptively sugary sauce. The next day, your defenses are down thanks to the choice you made yesterday. This time, you have a sandwich, not even giving consideration to the fact that the refined carbohydrates in bread are basically just sugar. Later, you compromise again with tortilla chips and salsa from your favorite Mexican place. The day after that, you give in once more with a fast food burger for the sake of convenience. As you continue to give in, the demons grow in size and strength. The feelings they feed you are stronger. The impulse to indulge, unshakable. Finally, you end up grabbing a package of Oreos during your weekly grocery. It falls into your cart with zero resistance. Once it's there, you have second thoughts about it, but you're already rationalizing. The demons communicate with feelings, but the justifications are your own. "I know I shouldn't eat this, but I'll get right back on track tomorrow." 5 days later, you're sitting in front of the TV eating a pint of Häagen-Dazs with another backup pint in the freezer. "You're pathetic." That's your own voice. The demons don't taunt. They're far too sophisticated for that. They would never lower themselves to insults. But this kind of self-talk can easily take you down a dark path where the demons lead and you always follow. You learn you can never compromise with this enemy. You learn it the hard way. But you're a fighter, so you get back to meal prepping. You get back on a schedule. You resolve to fight harder this time. You keep busy because you've heard the saying about idle hands, but they know eventually a weekend will come where you have nothing planned, nothing to occupy your time. The attack will come on a day when your healthy meals are already prepared in neat little Tupperware containers. There is no junk food in the house. The battle is in your favor. But they whisper, "You are bored." With a long day of Netflix in front of you, you think, "Maybe I should grab some trail mix or something while I watch TV." That small compromise is enough to put you back on the slippery slope to overindulgence. By the afternoon, you will have progressed to potato chips, and from there, probably cookies. You learn boredom is just another ambush to watch out for. So you start over. You begin the fight again. Your resolve is stronger this time. You know yourself better. You know that if you keep to a regular schedule, work, go to the gym, and eat meals at regular times every day, then it becomes easy to avoid the demons. Monday through Friday are a breeze, and when you keep busy on weekends, avoiding the demons becomes effortless. You keep to this pattern for a few weeks and are once again in control. It feels amazing. The demons cannot stand against you when you're strong like this. So they wait. They wait for a gap in your defenses. Inevitably, you give them one, because life is not meant to be lived on a schedule all the time. You take a vacation, or you come down with a head cold, or some social engagement breaks your pattern, leaving you without the time or the energy to meal prep. Your successes over the past few weeks have made you stronger, but they have also made you arrogant. You think that if you give in just for one day, just for the sake of convenience, you can get right back on track the next. Because you've got this. You are in control now. But they whisper, "You deserve a break." One day turns into six. Getting back on track the next day is never a given. You learn this lesson over and over again. You learn that anything interrupting your schedule, anything that breaks your pattern of behavior, leaves you vulnerable to the enemy. Vacations are especially problematic. Most importantly, you learn that you are never as in control as you think you are. As they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you are powerless over this. Over time, you realize the sugar demons have patterns as well. They were born of patterns. Before you were old enough to speak, your parents rewarded good behavior with candy and other sugary treats. They gave you ice cream to cheer you up when you were sad. Every birthday into adulthood was celebrated with cake. Every accomplishment, every great milestone in your life was celebrated with sugar. Every tragedy was consoled by it. The pattern is simple. Need a reward? Have some sugar. Feeling a bit down? Have some sugar. The reward center of your brain is directly linked to your emotional dependence on sugar, and the sugar demons have a direct line on your emotions. So you know that when you're feeling sad, elated, bored, or stressed, the demons will come. That's the predictable part of the disease. You cannot fight them with logic, otherwise you could just say, "This is bad for me, so I'm going to turn it off." Obviously, this has no effect on the demons except perhaps to amuse them. But knowing when and how they will strike is valuable. With this knowledge, you can form your own patterns, which allow you to resist. Keep sugar out of the house. Never compromise. Stick to a schedule. Stay active. These are your weapons, and for God's sake, keep learning how they fight. It's your only chance. So after I finish dinner, I prepare for the inevitable showdown. The demons love to come at this time of night. They tell me I'm stressed. It's usually over something work-related, something that must get done tomorrow or else. It's a hollow feeling, like I'm empty even though I just ate. I've been here so many times now. I know how to resist. I know how to win this fight. I will win this fight. But they whisper. Sound familiar? If any of this sounds familiar to you, then you are dealing with sugar addiction, or as I like to call it, the sugar demons. Their victims are everywhere. In fact, just by being an adult over the age of 20, there's a pretty good chance you're either addicted to sugar or have a poor relationship with it. It's far more common than you might think. While nobody has an exact number of how many people are currently suffering from sugar addiction, a good place to start is by looking at obesity rates. The current obesity rate in the U.S. is over 36%, according to CDC data. We can assume the majority of those people are sugar addicted for reasons I will outline in another chapter. An additional 33% of adults are not yet obese, but are considered overweight. These numbers add up to nearly 70% of the adult population. However, not every person who is overweight is sugar addicted, and not every sugar addict is overweight either. My guess is if we remove all of the overweight people who are not sugar addicted from the equation and add in the average or underweight people who are, then we would still arrive at a number somewhere in the vicinity of 70%. That's 7 out of every 10 people you know. Sure, that's only a rough estimate and likely inaccurate, but it's plausible. What if the real number is only 6 out of 10 people, or even 5 of 10? That's still at least half of everyone you know. Don't forget, these numbers only account for overweight and obese adults, but sugar addiction often begins much sooner than adulthood. An even better indicator of how many people are sugar addicts is the number of people suffering type 2 diabetes. According to the most recent CDC data, over 100 million people are living with diabetes or have prediabetes. In other words, a full third of the U.S. population is living with a disease or the precursor to a disease caused by the overconsumption of carbohydrates like sugar and high fructose corn syrup. That's 1 out of every 3 people. If we take into account how many people become sugar addicted long before the precursors to type 2 diabetes appear, an A1C measurement of 5.7% to 6.4%, or a fasting blood glucose of 100 milligrams per deciliter to 125 milligrams per deciliter. then we're talking even more people. The point is, you are not alone in this. People everywhere are dealing with sugar addiction. But due to the fact our culture tends to reserve the word addiction for things like street drugs, many are not able to recognize their own sugar addiction for what it is. The earlier section you heard about my own internal struggle with the sugar demons is actually from a blog post I wrote in 2016. I still receive a good amount of feedback on that post from friends and strangers alike, people who want to tell me how much they identify with my experience. One Redditor commented, "It's like you're inside my brain." More often, though, people begin their comments with the qualifier, "I don't think I have a sugar addiction, but..." then proceed to tell me how they often experience feeling exactly what I describe in the post. They are sugar addicts who are just not comfortable associating themselves with the word addiction. Consider yourself fortunate to be in the small minority of people who recognize they have a problem. This book is written for people like you. How this book works. Each chapter outlines a different strategy for fighting the sugar demons. I strongly recommend using all of my tactics as opposed to cherry-picking. Sugar demons are formidable, so it's best to be over-prepared than to get caught with your pants down. They are trying to kill you, after all. In subsequent chapters, I will explain each strategy in detail and also tell you how I've applied it in my own life. Everyone's life is different, so it's up to you to choose how to apply these methods to your own situation. Don't worry, though. All of these approaches are simple enough so anyone should be able to practice them. Most of this stuff is really about changing what takes place between your ears. Each chapter will end with a nutritional supplement strategy as a bonus. It's not necessary to use any of the nutritional supplements recommended in order to successfully battle your sugar demons, but I found them to make the process a little easier. Now, let's talk about the enemy. Sugar versus sugar demons. Sugar. Merriam-Webster defines sugar as 1. A sweet, crystalline substance obtained from various plants, especially sugarcane and sugar beet, consisting essentially of sucrose, and used as a sweetener in food and drink. 2. Any class of soluble, crystalline, typically sweet-tasting carbohydrates found in living tissues and exemplified by glucose and sucrose. 3. Used as a term of endearment. What's wrong, sugar? As an addict, I never think of sugar as a sweet, crystalline substance. In the grips of a craving, it's a mental picture of cookies paired with a vague sense of how they might taste and a feeling that pushes me toward eating them. But before I succumb to eating blatantly sweet foods like cookies, I'll often get started down the path with the non-sweet-tasting carbohydrates such as a piece of bread, and, prior to that, maybe the sweet chemicals from a diet soft drink. Of the three things I just mentioned, cookies, bread, and diet soda, only one of them is made with what we think of as sugar. So for the purposes of this book, we need to redefine what sugar is to us as addicts, and specifically what kinds of foods and ingredients to avoid. Sugar is a carbohydrate, so carbohydrate addiction is just another way of saying sugar addiction. Of course, there are two different types of carbs, simple and complex. Sugar is a simple carb. It spikes blood sugar, while complex carbs like whole wheat are supposed to be better for us because they elevate our blood sugar slowly over a longer period of time. In the end, though, all carbohydrates convert to glucose, sugar, in your body. Does it matter if it happens all at once or slowly throughout the day? Complex carbs are just the slow-release version of our drug. I'm not saying all forms of carbohydrates are bad and we can never eat them again, but we need to understand sugar is anything that feeds our addiction, which includes many forms of refined carbohydrate and artificial sweeteners. Refined carbohydrates, though not sweet, can be just as bad as sugar. I can binge on a box of saltine crackers just as easily as a tray of Oreos. Technically, the artificial sweeteners in diet soda aren't carbohydrates, but they have a physiological effect on me which eventually leads to binging on actual sugar. Even the white potatoes in a potato salad can be problematic if I overindulge. To keep all of this stuff straight, I've come up with a basic system for classifying the carbs I can eat, the carbs I can't eat, and the carbs that require caution. Consider a traffic light. Green means go. Eat as much as you want of these foods. Yellow means be cautious, very cautious. Foods in the yellow category can get me into trouble unless I consume them in small or measured portions. Red means stop. I don't eat foods in the red category without suffering the consequences, and it may always be that way for me. Through trial and error, I've managed to put together a comprehensive list of carbohydrate-containing foods in all three categories. Green light carbs. Any non-starchy vegetable, including broccoli, asparagus, green beans, cauliflower, celery, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cucumber, mushrooms, peppers, salad greens, lettuce, spinach, arugula, sprouts, okra, zucchini squash. A few starchy vegetables, including sweet potatoes, beets, winter squash, butternut, acorn. Yellow light carbs. Starchy vegetables, including white potatoes, red potatoes, fingerling potatoes, Yukon Gold potatoes, carrots, parsnips, green peas. Whole wheat and grains. Corn, whole wheat breads, whole wheat pasta, brown rice, oats, rye, barley. Beans and legumes. Black beans, red beans, kidney beans, lentils, peanuts. Yep, these are legumes. Pinto beans, soybeans. High-fat dairy. Cheese, sour cream, heavy cream. Note: high-fat dairy products are low-carb foods and almost in the green light category, but I put them in the yellow light category because excessive consumption can be problematic for me. Fruit. Berries. Blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries. Apples, bananas, oranges, pears, melon, water and cantaloupe, kiwi, grapes, cherries. Red light carbs. Any foods with these added forms of sugar. Table sugar, sucrose, HFC, high fructose corn syrup, agave nectar, honey, maple syrup, barley malt, beet sugar, molasses, brown rice syrup, cane juice, brown sugar, caramel, coconut sugar, corn syrup, evaporated cane juice, fructose, galactose, glucose, fruit juice concentrate, maltodextrin, rice bran syrup and rice syrup, sorghum syrup, turbinado sugar. There are other names for added sugar, but if you avoid processed foods, you will avoid most of these. Processed wheat and grains. White bread, all forms. Pasta. Cornbread. Cornmeal. White rice. Oats, including oatmeal. Fruit. Fruit juices, including anything you juice at home in a juicer. Dairy. Milk, yogurt, half and half. Artificial sweeteners. Aspartame, NutraSweet. Erythritol, saccharin, sweet and low equal. Sorbitol, sucralose, Splenda, xylitol. Alcohol in all of its forms, including beer, wine, and the hard stuff. When I consume red light carbs, it usually means I'm in the grips of a sugar binge or on my way to one. But yellow light carbs can be part of my daily life as long as I'm careful. For instance, I eat 6 ounces of blueberries every day with breakfast. Blueberries are a nutrient-rich superfood I want to keep in my diet, even though they're sweet and contain fructose. They're a yellow light food because the sugar in natural, unprocessed foods like blueberries doesn't increase my cravings if I eat reasonable portions. So just to be safe, I measure out exactly 6 ounces of blueberries every morning on my food scale. That's how careful I am with yellow light foods. You'll notice I'm not prescribing a specific diet here. Everyone is free to feed themselves in a way that works best for their individual body. I don't care if you do this as a vegan, a paleo diet, a zone diet, or you count macros, so long as you avoid eating red light foods. I'm truly indifferent when it comes to what specific diet program you choose to follow. The main priority here is to get you off sugar. Sugar is just a jumble of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. It's neither alive nor dead. It's just a chemical compound similar to the air you breathe and the water you drink. It may be your poison, but it's not your real enemy. Think about other poisons you have in your house. There's no invisible hand pushing you toward the cabinet below the kitchen sink to stare at the bottles of Lysol and Windex the way you stand in front of your refrigerator staring at the ice cream. The real enemy is the thing you can't describe. It's the internal force guiding you to the refrigerator. The empty feeling. The drumbeat in the back of your mind that won't go away until it gets what it wants. Let's meet that enemy now. Sugar demons. Indulge me for a moment while I use a short story from my experience as a public school teacher to help me explain where sugar demons come from. The 16-year-old lies on the floor, refusing to get up. I look up at the clock and make a note that he's been lying on the floor for 20 minutes now. I ask him for the fifth time if he's ready to return to his desk and get on task. He responds with profanity. He takes off one of his shoes. He examines his shoe for a while, then proceeds to throw it up in the air and play catch with himself. I continue to document his behavior. As a public school teacher who works exclusively with emotionally disturbed children, this isn't anything I haven't seen before. But it's not how I want to spend seventh period, my last class of the day. The student is roughly my size. If he does anything that constitutes a danger to himself or the other people in the room, it's my job to physically restrain him. Right now, it seems like his behavior might escalate in that direction. The situation has me on edge. I can't afford to let my guard down in case he does something sudden, like pick up a desk and throw it, or try to stab me with a pencil. In other words, I have to stay alert. It's a low to medium level of stress that doesn't go away until the dismissal bell rings. By some miracle, we manage to make it through the class without incident. The stress doesn't completely go away, though. It transforms into a tired feeling. All I want to do is go home and turn my brain off. The problem with turning your brain off is that you can't. It would kill you. What you can do is turn off parts of your brain that think about and reflect on experiences you'd rather forget. Many people do it every day. Most do it in front of a TV screen or a cell phone. When I get home from my stressful day, I sit down in front of the TV and turn off the thinking part of my brain. It's time to binge watch something good on Netflix. At some point, I get up and wander to the pantry. It's a reflex. I don't even realize I'm doing it until I find myself standing in the pantry door looking over my options. We don't keep junk food in the house on account of my addiction, so fortunately I don't see any cookies. It occurs to me that even by standing there, I'm asking for trouble. But an invisible hand is holding me in place, guiding me to find something. I spot a jar of my wife's peanut butter. Telling myself I'll just have one or two tablespoons, I bring the jar back to the couch and sit down. The thinking part of my brain shuts off again. I eat the whole jar of peanut butter before even finishing the first episode of Stranger Things. Let the self-loathing begin. Fight or flight. The part of your brain that stays active all the time, including while you sleep, is called the limbic system. It's often referred to as the lizard brain, because if you take away the higher levels of the brain, what you're left with is basically the same as what a lizard has for brains. The limbic system manages primal, emotional responses such as fear and anger. It tells your adrenal glands to start pumping in the face of danger, and it rewards biological behaviors such as sex and eating via the release of the neurotransmitter dopamine. Basically, the limbic system is all the brain you need if your life revolves around eating, not getting eaten by predators, and reproducing. It's powerful enough to override the other thinking parts of your brain. The limbic system is the part of your brain the sugar demons have taken over. It's where they live. All activity in the limbic system takes place below the level of conscious thought, and that's...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?